Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Jules Holland here. I'm here with Jim Moyer, and I'm delighted to say that we welcome you to another one of our podcasts where we get exquisite and very special guests to come and discuss various subjects very, very loosely based around the idea of transport. Jim, who's our guest this week?
She's a blonde bombshell who has no qualms about parking a car at rakish angles in municipal parking facilities.
Nice.
Yeah, you like that?
Very much so.
Any truth? She's an actress, and she is Sally Phillips.
Oh, welcome to the Sally Phillips.
Hello. Hi there. I can't actually drive, so yes, indeed, if I did manage
can
to
park...
Can
you not? That's why I park at rakish angles.
I like the idea that it's rakish rather than just crap.
Have you never driven?
I started trying to drive once I had kids, and but my kids just woke up a lot at night, and the... driving instructor said you shouldn't drive this tired if you could drive and you can't drive.
So how do you get about?
Well, we live in London, so just go on the tube.
On the bus.
Yeah. No, I like walking places, and I quite like a push bike. But my dad worked for British Airways, I was telling him, so I always feel very comfortable when I get in a plane. I did my first flight when I was 5 weeks old.
Really? In what?
In a VC-10.
Oh,
really?
Oh, yes. Oh, that is glamorous. That's the most glamorous thing anybody on this show has said so far.
I think
far.
It's probably the most.
You haven't done
glamorous.
Many yet. You haven't done many yet. So.
But I think that must be the golden age, if I may say so. You were growing up in the golden age of executive lifestyles with somebody, with your father working for BOAC. What sort of car did he have?
Well, it depends where we were. I can't really remember any of the cars except for in the Middle East. We definitely had Buicks. We had a gold Buick in the Middle East.
Get you.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Driving around in a BOAC in a VC-10. Yeah. And, driving around
well,
in a Buick.
I think the VC-10 stopped in about the mid-70s, didn't they? So then it went on to... But it was much more glamorous then. Of course, now it's just like getting a train. But I remember I really wanted to be an air stewardess growing up. And I remember the poster girl for BA coming out to visit. And it was like having Marilyn Monroe out, you know, because it wasn't fake tan in those days. It was just a genuine deep copper tone tan and white teeth and extremely blonde and wearing the uniform at all times. And they were really witty, the stewardesses at that point.
Spoke seven languages.
Yeah, smart. Exactly. Like an ambassador's wife. Yeah. I remember there were all kinds of stewardess wit. So there was a famous thing with Muhammad Ali. Saying to a stewardess, "Superman don't need no seatbelt," and her leaning down and saying, "Superman don't need no plane, Mr. Ali." And another one with like an Italian president. What was the plane where you had to go in the back, like rear entry, DC, something like that?
Oh, yeah,
cargo plane.
No, an Italian prime minister going in and saying, "I feel like a suppository." And then the stewardess saying, "Imagine how you'll feel when you disembark, sir."
Hey,
also very extreme wits as well.
Yeah, and there was it must be an urban myth, but it was the story of Starbum. I don't know if you've
who
a Starbum, the stewardess Starbum, which is like an airline version of the little boy who put his finger in the dike, where they empty the toilets with a sort of vacuum suction pump at the airport, and then they have to like screw the cap on again, and apparently that wasn't properly screwed on, so before the lights went up, the stewardess went to the toilet they'd just taken off and got sucked into the toilet. She didn't get sucked all the way out. The plane would have crashed if she hadn't blocked the hole with her ass, and of course that blue blue bleach is very, very corrosive. So the plane had to then land back at the airport. But by that stage, she'd been branded the kind of star shape with the blue. This is how the story goes, with the blue bleach.
Going back to the gold Buick, when you arrived, where was the gold Buick? Was that in the Middle East, was it?
Middle East, so it would have been, I think we had Buicks, we certainly had Buicks in Abu Dhabi, Dubai and Bahrain. And we had, when we were in Abu Dhabi, used to drive quite often to Dubai. So that was would have been 3 or 4 hours in what is now a super highway. But at the time, it was just a road through the desert. And there were all these nodding donkeys. So like the oil pumps, they've changed them now. They're proper, but they used to just look like a, you know.
Yeah.
And they used to be painted with animals on. And
what, like those pumps, flamingos, like, weren't they?
That
dip into your baby sham, you know. That's like you used to put them on the side of your alcoholic glass.
What a lovely idea! Because I've seen those pumps in the sort of the desert and places like that in America, but they don't paint them. But the idea of painting like animals, so their heads are sort of nodding up and down, yeah, like a sort of donkey not waving.
Yeah,
at
that's
you.
What they used to be like.
How lovely! How cheerful! Did they put little wigs or anything on them?
No, but I remember there was a red giraffes and things like that. It was all lovely. A bit.
So it's like a giraffe drinking crude oil.
Drinking crude oil, yeah, which is why it was red. Yeah. And mirages. I remember those long journeys with. I mean, it didn't used to, as in, it wasn't like cartoons where you'd see palaces and stuff, but certainly that the road all looked
so
like
you
it
would
was
see,
covered in water. Yeah,
really. Oh well, that's
and we had the tapes. Though are they, what are they called? Those
eight tracks,
oh. 8-track tapes in the Buick.
Oh,
so we
nice.
Used to listen to ABBA and the Goon Show. That was it. Those were the two that we had.
Oh, nice.
The Goon Show traveling the Goon through Show. The desert in a Buick.
Yes.
What an
Gold
image.
Buick.
Have you ever done any desert driving?
Myself, yes, I did actually. Curiously enough, I think it was in Abu Dhabi, and I went with, curiously enough, in the other vehicle. It was a showbiz drive because we were doing a show. There was Leo Sayer, and he got marooned in the desert. But the strange thing was, all you could see was sand dunes, just as far as I could see in every direction. But we had a phone signal. I couldn't understand how. That's how sort of advanced it was. But if you didn't let the air out of your tyres. Then it wouldn't work. You had to sort of half flatten your tyres, and then the sort of four wheel drive things would work going across the sand.
I went in one of those trips. I was in Luxor on holiday and went on a dune driving experience. And the fella was new at it, and he was showing off. He was British, and he recognised me, and he thought, "I'm going to show off here a bit." And he tried to leap over the top of a dune. Which he did, and then smashed into the dune on the other side, and I went through the windscreen.
No!
Oh, no!
And I spent the rest of the day, I was all right, I survived, but I spent the rest of the day in a very low quality hospital.
Did they offer you your money back?
They offered me a selection of plasters with Jesus Christ on them.
But they didn't offer you. I'm talking about the people with the desert ride experience.
No, I think he disappeared. I think he got the sack and then fled the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably the worst. If you put the customer, especially a showbiz customer, through the windscreen on his first day out, I think that's probably the worst thing you could do, really.
Yeah, you've gone too far then, haven't you?
Yes. Didn't Harry Secombe meet Spike Milligan when he crashed his tank into him in a ditch? In the desert somewhere.
Sounds about right.
Sounds about right, yeah. My dad was telling me that they never ever used to drive at night because you'd crash into a camel because the camels were attracted to the lights.
Oh.
And no one survived a crash into a camel.
With Squeeze, we were doing a show in America somewhere and it was boiling hot and there were so many insects, but their insects are the size of, you know, my fist. They have sort of giant flies that big and sort of weird things that you just don't know what they're called even. Anyway, when all the lights on the stage, all these insects clouded, they made a cloud, like a sort of, it was a biblical storm of insects, and they were going in your mouth, you couldn't sort of see anything. And so we stopped playing, we said, you've got to turn the lights out, just turn the lights out, because that's what's attracting them. So the lights went off, and then we said, and it was at the back of where the audience were, we said to the people, go to your cars, all the cars line up, and just put your headlights on, because that will then draw off the insects
and into their cars
and you know it worked. It was unbelievable. It worked. It was like a sort of a dramatic film thing. So it's always worth bearing in mind, you know, and like you say, if you're driving through the desert, keep the headlights off.
Keep your headlights off and your tires
so you don't attract. They're supposed to be very, very randy camels, aren't they?
Are they?
Apparently.
But that's a very good tip, you see. I spent a lot of people here listening to this now didn't know that and were thinking of going and driving through the desert at night. But so it's like rabbits.
Be wary of camels. But camels are a lot bigger.
I was in a vehicle in South Africa that screeched to a halt in front of a hippo that was just wandering about in the middle of a field where I was driving. Well, I wasn't driving, but I was in the car. We were looking for hippos, actually, so it wasn't really a surprise.
You said you quite like walking. Is there a favourite particular walk you've got that you like to go a walk on?
I really like walking along the Thames.
That's exactly what Jane Horrocks did, but she cycles along the Thames.
Oh, does she? Yeah, she's fitter than me.
Well, probably walking is...
I'm not particularly good at the gears on my bike. I think I've got the gears wrong because it's tremendous effort, or I'm unbelievably unfit. Both of those are possible.
She said she gives names to the people in her mind who she passes. Do you see the same people on your walk?
Yeah, quite often, but I suppose...
Ignore them.
I identify them with the dogs, and I've got a plant identification... This makes me sound really spotty, but I've got a plant identification app.
Very useful.
And I've been... Well, I don't have any... You know, I'm not a gardener or anything. I've really been enjoying that. So there's all those names of plants from Dickens and stuff, like thornflower.
So you point you take a photograph of it and it tells you what it is.
And it tells you what it is,
I think,
yeah.
Isn't it great, the world that we're living in? Because in the past, you'd have to go around with a small dog cart full of books, full yeah. of things, wouldn't it? So get my toadstool book out.
Or I guess you'd take the plant home. I suppose that would be the alternative.
Take your neighbour's plant home. What about if you see something and you sort of identify it as being, say, marijuana or heroin poppies or something like that?
Well, I mean, I live in hope. None of that has happened yet. I did meet the head of the fungarium at Kew, who's king of fungi, and he showed me a zombie fungus that had burst through the face of a caterpillar.
Have you seen them? You get them in Peru in the Andes, and they grow out of the ground, and apparently
you get them here as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
because they're sought after because there's some that have. It's either a cure. Or they'll create some kind of psychedelia.
Yeah.
I can't remember which.
Well, it's true that you can't... what they say is that all mushrooms are edible, but some of them only once.
Yeah.
Yeah, Flyagarics.
Yes.
Yeah.
The prettiest.
Well, you know, the other thing I learned about Flyagarics is that Siberian shamans use reindeer as a kind of drug purification system.
Oh.
So they put they feed the flyagaric to the reindeer. The reindeer then absorb the toxin and piss out pure psychedelic. So they then drink the reindeer urine.
Really? Where do they do this?
Siberia. It sounds like I've made that up, but it's actually true.
You can if we're talking on that subject, that. There's a kind of coffee that's made from civics poo.
Yeah.
What's a civic? Is there people who work in the town hall?
No, not a civic. Not an ombudsman or anything like that. It's a civet, which is a medium-sized cat.
Oh, yes.
And it's the most expensive coffee in the world because it's made from ground-up civet poo.
Yeah.
So that, what a dining experience, that, and you drink that
and then
wash it down with some reindeer piss.
And now a message from our sponsors.
I'm considering a retirement home for my penultimate moments. Where can you recommend?
For you, my friend, might I suggest one of my string of withdrawal homes positioned in restful towns up and down the coast. You might choose Last Orders in Great Yarmouth, Final Countdown in Felixstowe, or Climax in Southend.
I'll bear it in mind.
Something I've noticed is that when people get divorced, they go through a couple of years of hankering after living on a houseboat for some reason.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, my son was talking about having a houseboat. He's 6'3", and I said it's probably not the right thing to do.
There was a documentary on London's canals, and I do love the canals because there's something about feeling like it's the underside of London. Like, you know, in Primrose Hill you have these really posh houses and then their gardens sort of sink into the water, and it's like King Louis in the Jungle Book, you know, sort of overgrown and undressed bits of London. And I saw there were all these water squatters, and I became...
What, squatters?
Yeah.
So they haven't
paid for a mooring.
Oh. Mm.
And then the chase, you can only go at 4 miles an hour. And so even the water police
What, are they in barges?
They're going at 4 miles an hour as well.
Following each
other.
So,
like, no one can ever catch anyone because, like, the water squatters are going away from the police at 4 miles an hour, and then the police are coming after them at 4 miles an hour, and anyone could just run along the bank quicker.
Once they move at 4 miles, they're no longer squatting because they're just moving then.
Well, yeah, that's it. I don't know. That's
always tickled me. Have you ever been on a canaling holiday?
I haven't. I really, really want to go on a canaling holiday.
Right.
I'd recommend that.
Yeah, when me and my friends, when we were young, we were about 17, right? Every year we'd go down to the Norfolk Broads and get a whole season's boat and sail it around.
Yeah, I have very
fond memories of that.
Really want to do that. I turned 50 in lockdown and I really want for my 50th to get a load of girls on these boats, go down, and I want to go to a pottery in Bath, get off in Bath and make jugs because that feels appropriate.
In Bath?
Yes, I think the dream for me was being on an aqueduct. But I think we might have a problem. I seem to remember that.
That's one of my dreams as well.
They won't allow, for some reason, you can't. This was maybe back like 30 years ago when I first went on my initial canaling holiday. I don't think they'd allow all women or all men for some reason.
Oh, really?
What, on a canaling holiday?
Yes, because in case they thought they were sort of up to no good. I don't know.
You're not allowed single-sex boats on canals.
That's how it was back in the day. I hope we've moved on.
But how weird that you have to have mixed...
Yeah.
That's strange. You can imagine it the other way round.
Well, when I went in the 70s, it was 5 17-year-old boys. Which is why they
brought that rule in.
Yeah, just because of you. Is it about the travel or the destination for you a lot of the time?
I don't mind the travel. I think that's it, because I was brought up in this
jet set world.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I guess so.
You got a VC-10?
Mm. And then I remember the first 747s. I remember that being really exciting.
So I was going to say, onto them?
Well, I think we did when the plane was empty. I actually rang my dad because he had said you might talk about transport. And I was like, in my head, I realised it has completely got mashed up with early Bond movies. I said to my dad, I remember going to sleep in a bedroom.
On a plane?
On a plane. And then he said, oh, that would have been the crew restroom. So they had little kind of bunk rooms that the crew could sleep in. But I remember upstairs in the early 747, so that would have been end of the 70s, first time they came out. It was like a piano bar upstairs.
That's right.
Like a cocktail lounge.
Stalls at a bar, that's right, with little seat belts on them.
Do they? I don't even remember them having seat belts.
Yeah, probably not. Well, you didn't need them. I once went on Elvis's plane, not when he was alive, but his plane's there. But the most impressive thing about it was there was a huge bedroom at the back, and the bed was almost the width of this enormous bed, the width of the whole sort of plane. But across it, there was this seat belt, but the seat belt was tiny. Because in comparison to, there was just a tiny little thin ribbon of a seatbelt, just like a 1960s car seatbelt.
Little ribbon.
That they would strap him in with of an evening.
Was it shaped like a guitar?
It would have been nice, no.
Maybe the strings could have been the seatbelt, if that was the case.
That would have been another nice touch, actually, yeah.
You were on, let's say, John Coltrane's plane, it would have had a bed shaped like a saxophone. Which would be very uncomfortable. Or maybe you could slide into the horn. I'm going too far with this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When I was a kid, my grandparents used to live near Scarborough, and there was Paxton's buses that they made there, and I used to love the shape of them. They were fantastic shapes, those coaches. They've got a bit space age now, like the red buses in London.
Yeah.
I just can't get the Route Master. Right. I like the shape of. And I was thinking about it. What was the best? What is the best era for the shape of vehicles? Anything? Cars, planes.
60s.
Do you think? I think 50s. I would say tail end. I think the late end of the 50s and start of the 60s. Best for all design and best for films as well.
Yes, very, very good for films.
What's your favourite film?
I like a lot of those early films. You know, the Greta Garbo Laughs, that one, Inochka, where she's playing a Russian agent.
Have you seen Traffic by Jacques Tati?
No, I like the sound of it, though. It sounds transport-related.
It is. Now, let's bring this back to transport. Traffic is great. It's got one of the best transport jokes, two of them, actually, that I've ever seen. There's a big traffic jam somewhere in France. And my favourite thing, it made me laugh my head off, was there's the traffic jam so slow, and this Morris Minor is driving probably about 5 miles an hour and tries to avoid crashing into a car in front of it by veering off into a field and then just doesn't stop and goes about 100 yards and crashes into the only tree in the middle of the field.
But my favourite car jokes are yours and Bob's. The car at the opening the doors.
Oh, that? Well, yeah, we did that in Bang Bang. I love doing that.
So funny.
Have you ever seen that?
No, what are you doing?
So
what
funny.
We parked the car and I had quite a bit of trouble trying to explain this to executives. And said, no, it's not going to work. But one of them was, it was our lunchtime and go off for lunch in the car and park it somewhere. So we'd park in between two trees and then not be able to get out of the car because the trees were blocking the door. And so then I'd say, and this was done silently, so I'd say, I'm going to get in the back and get an axe and chop down the trees, which I then did, but still weren't low enough to let us out of the side of the doors. And another one was where we parked, and then two cars parked either side, and we just kept kicking the doors in.
You did more than two, didn't you?
I seem to remember you blew
all kinds of things up, like the attempts to get out of the car.
Well, there was another one that I guess there was a lot of it. Whenever you turned the engine, turned the key, the boot would fly off into a field with some light music and then explode. But there's another one where I was driving, because this was all done silently, and I said to Bob, I said, stop there, I want that. And it was just a big engine out of a ship. Which I then lifted and put in the back of the boot of the car, which then, like the Citroën in Jacques Tati's Traffic, tipped the front of the car right off. So, and we drove off like that.
What's your favourite train journey?
I like going down to Cornwall and going up to Edinburgh. Mm. So Edinburgh, that thing of their last... The last bit is very beautiful, isn't it? Going in for the festival every year. Mm. Did you do it a lot, the festival?
No, once.
No, only once.
And that was enough. Yeah,
I used to do it a lot. I used to love the Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah,
I do like Edinburgh. I love going to Edinburgh. And you're right on a train. You get that final.
Yeah.
That final. I do like it. You know, when I'm going up north, if I'm going either side, if I'm going to Manchester or up the other side, if you're going to Edinburgh. There's things that you look out for, isn't it? And I really like those big cooling towers.
Yes.
You know, Drax and places like that. I've always wanted to get inside one of them. There's one called Drax near the Humber, which is a good name, isn't it?
It is a very good
James Bond villain, isn't it, Drax?
I really want to do that train trip across Canada.
Where does that go?
It's just from one end of Canada to the other, all the way across the middle.
The nearest I've got to that is I went from Montreal to New York with Bob on a Greyhound bus. And of course, in America, you either fly or drive. If you can't afford that, you get the train. And if you're absolutely skint, you get the Greyhound bus. And you could tell that people who were on that bus with us.
How long did that take?
I think it was about 8 hours, and it was our first time in New York.
I'd have thought it would have taken longer.
Yeah, where did you go from one side to
from
the other?
Montreal. So you're just driving down.
Yeah.
You stop off for a bit in Albany in
New York.
You go down. Anyway, it was about 8 hours. Mm. And then we got off, and our first image of New York was, it was absolutely stifling hot, really sweaty, and two coppers. And they were having a skipping competition up and down the curb. and one of them had a huge afro with his hat balanced on the top. And they were jumping. I thought, these coppers look like they're having a lot of fun in this. Not like the old British Bobby, who was very serious.
Yeah,
and,
you could skip in those days, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But Sally, why did you want to travel across Canada particularly and not to...
Well, I mean, just there are those sort of great train journeys that I'd really like to do all of them, like the Orient Express and the one from Siberia through to China. Is that one? Have I made that up? And then one down South America. I just would love to do that. I do love train travel, and
I think you should.
Yeah,
you know, unlike
once I've got the kids out of the house, that'll be the.
Chris Tarrant and Michael Portillo, who always seem to get all these fabulous jobs.
Yeah.
But three of us should go instead.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. I did drive across Canada. I remember to squeeze driving. I mean, it's Canada's beautiful sort of landscape and everything. But there's miles and miles of nothing as well. Miles and miles, you know. A friend of mine went
It's sort of meditative, though, sitting on a train looking out the window. And you can read and write and eat and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I used to live in Rome, and I used to teach up in Frascati, and there's a really nice train journey, like half an hour out of Termini up into the hills, going past Castel Gandolfo, which is the Pope's summer palace, which is, I can't remember which scene it is, there's a scene where they get through a load of exposition without you noticing, because they've got the Pope in his swimming trunks lying in the pool in Castel Gandolfo. And they always say, with a screenwriting lesson, oh, you can get away with that exposition because all the audience is thinking is, look, the Pope's in the pool. But anyway, Castel Gandolfo, where the Pope's in the pool scene was shot.
What were you teaching there?
English. So I taught English in the Italian Ministry of Defence during the first Gulf War.
So you can speak Italian?
I did then.
It's all gone.
I think so. Pretty much.
Interesting. Not one. I don't think we've ever mentioned once the ideas of Ferraris or Lamborghinis or all the great Maseratis and all the great Italian cars that there are.
I've never had an Italian car.
No, me neither.
No, neither have I. I quite fancy a Cinquecento, though. My mum had a Cinquecento. One of those, supercharged Cinquecentos, where they put a racing engine in.
Oh, yes, the...
A-Bath, they call it A-Bath.
Yeah, exactly, that's right. You get a new one of those. Yeah, they sort of bomb along. I think that would suit you. Especially, you know, I think that would be the thing for you to now pass your test in.
Yeah. Do you think at this point I just go for automatic?
Yeah, I think so. I think one... Yeah. Or a pedal car, maybe. Yeah. That's what we're talking about. Having
pedalo, even. That'd be like a swan-shaped pedalo.
Oh, I love those.
I like those, too.
I really wanted to get one of those, but...
For your moat.
The trouble is, if you go anywhere where there's an overhanging branch, the swan's neck gets stuck.
Yeah.
But I saw...
Maybe one, just a duck.
Yeah,
pedalo. A duck might be better, or a headless swan.
Headless swan, yeah.
Could be quite good, but they are nice.
There was an artist, when I lived in Rome, there was an artist who used to put your face on... the animal of your choice, but seemed to mainly do snails. And there was, of course, the Italians really buy art because they don't buy houses and they're ready to run away at any moment. So everything they have, everything of value, needs to fit in a car and for you to be able to drive it away. So he used to make these statues of snails and ducks and things, and then you could have your face. You have your face on a swan.
Well, that's what you want. Your face on a short neck.
On a headless swan. That's what I was just saying. I think it'd look really nice. I think the people would love it.
Well, I think we've...
Your face on a short neck swan.
I think it's a new form of transport that nobody would have thought of. Sally, it's been fantastic having you as our guest here this evening. You've heard our rather pathetic list of sponsors, but I think now you're on the show, we're likely to get a lot stronger.
I think it's probably going to do us some good, but thank you so much. How are you going to get back? Walk?
Fly. I'm going to fly.
Thank you, Sally Phillips. There she goes with a BOAC costume on.
Exactly.
Costume?
Yes, into the executive relaxement lounge.
Where you can get, you know, all the luxury foods.
All the luxury foods.
Soup with a bit of cress on.
Soup and G-Plan furniture.
G-Plan.
To rest on in between your journeys.
Yeah. Good luck, Sally. Good luck.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.